So the reason why we're going to be doing this topic today, which is Yikra Dechai Yikra Deshichvi, which literally means the honor of the life or the honor of the dead, is the following. Is that in the last week I had the opportunity of speaking at the RCA Yom Iyun for end of life issues. Samson, who in our shul, is very involved in the RCA, and he asked me to come speak, and I was very much the youngest in the league. This was all the experts in the field and people who've been in chaplaincy for a good 30 years at least. So I had a particular slot to speak, and I did a little bit of research, and it was so fascinating to me that I thought that we should I'd like to expand upon a little bit of what I found then and try to approach it here together, because it's such an interesting and intriguing topic which I feel is very little addressed in our mainstream media and just discussion. It's not really so much of a discussion. When this came up for me a number of years ago was I get a call from a distant relative who lives in America, and you know, a wonderful lady who is who left South Africa many years ago and settled in San Diego with her family. And it happens to be that towards the end of her life, unfortunately, I used to call her every Yom Tov and speak to her all the time. And towards the end of her life, she unfortunately had a double stroke, and then they found cancer and it metastasized, and slowly she deteriorated. And then I was made aware from another relative that in fact she had made the decision to donate her body to science. And that was, I only found that out immediately after her passing, which was a bit of a shock. And the question was dealing with the family and trying to speak to them about, you know, the permissibility or the lack of permissibility of donating your body to science in the first place. You know, are you allowed to do such a thing? In science, they don't use a body which has got metastasized cancer except for the corneas. There's not very much you can actually do with such a body. But in the end of the day, the family was very adamant, and the comment that was made was, Rabbi Trump, or wasn't a rabbi at the time, it was if she had said that that she wanted her body sent to the moon, that's what I would do, because I wanted to give her the ultimate respect. That's what I want to do, is give her what she wanted. And so it takes a little bit of reversing just to appreciate, you know, so how much right do we have over these issues? You know, how much of a baldus, of an ownership, do we have over our own end of life issues? How much do we have the right to waver? How much do we have the right to dictate?
Yeah, but this is not Kibbutz Avraham. This is an end.
Okay, so let's take it slowly. There's a few issues that we need to deal with. It's that you're right over here, but the argument of the son was that in fact it was Kibbutz Avraham because this is what she had wanted. That was the argument which was being made. So the question is the will or the decisions made by a person about their end-of-life issue something that needs to be respected, and where do they not have a right to make those decisions? Where's that line? So this is a very, very fascinating topic. What we need to do is we need to just expand. I'm going to start off with the easiest place possible, and that is about eulogies. Very simple. This is the easiest, the least emotional of it all. So let's start at the very beginning. I'd like to learn this all just together, just to appreciate the step-by-step. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin the following. The Gemara asks the following questions. This is source 1. Gemara Sanhedrin, Mem Vov Amud Beis, going over to Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Iboy Elohu, the Gemara asks, Hespeda, regarding a Hesped, is that Yikra Dechayi Havi or Yikra Deshichvi Havi? Whose honor is it? Is it the honor of the people who are living, or is it the honor of the person who has passed away? That's what the Gemara asks. So what would you think? What difference would that make? What do you think? What difference should it make if whose honor it is? So the Gemara says, that's the first thing the Gemara says. L'may nafkimena, what difference should this make halachically in normative practice? D'amar lo tispadu elahu gavra. A person says, you know what, for me, forget it all. It's all right. Don't do the whole thing. Don't give me a eulogy. So if you're going to say it's the honor of the dead, then he's right. He can say what he wants. He or she has that right. If it's the honor of the living, he doesn't have the right to talk about their honor, right? In the end of the day, it's the people who are going to be around there who are going to be gaining from this. Another nafkamin, which is very fascinating, and this is interesting, is inami lafuke mi yorshin. Is what about to extract from the inheritors? What does that mean? Happens to be today, you know, hespedim. You know, you know whoever's there. You know, if there's a particular leader or family member or grandchild, whatever the lineup is. In those days, it was a very, very serious thing. They would hire people to do hespedim because there are people who are professional sabdonim. People who knew how to, and it wasn't just speeches, it was actually musical. People who knew how to elicit the emotions in the right way. And you'd used to hire people to be able to do this, and this used to be a big thing. So the question is that this used to be part of the whole, you know, this is the whole package. You wouldn't just have to pay for a plot. You wouldn't just have to pay for the funeral director. You'd have to pay for the eulogizers. So the Gemara says, okay, whose bill is this on? That's exactly what Rashi says. Inami lafuke bin Yorshin, says Rashi, does in the second source. Al korchon schara sabtonim, the payment of the eulogizers, yikra deshichvi, if it's the honor of the dead, ki yoma lo tesabdunu letzai sinonei, if the Yorshim say, we don't want this hesped, if that you have to force them. If it is the honor of the live people, we're not going to listen to him if he denies it, but we're going to listen to them, and then they don't have to pay for it. That's the question that's at hand, the Gemara suggests. Because, you know, anybody can be the nicest guy in the world, but when it comes down to tachlis and the pocketbook, that's what the Gemara is saying over here, is who's going to pay for the sabtonim in the push comes to shove. And the Gemara goes through a number of proofs in either direction. One example, just as I'd put in, which is one, is the Gemara says the following, from Tanakh, Toshma, he has a proof. Vayava Avraham lispoid lisara veliv koisa. Avraham came to eulogize Sarah, his wife, and to cry for her. V'iomart mishum yikra d'chayihu, if it's about the honor of those who are living, mishum yikra da Avram mashuhu lelisara. If it's for the honor of Avram, how could he wait? Right, Avram had this whole business where he was negotiating with Ephron, and it took a while. And he came from Hebron; it took a long time to get there to the hesped in the first place. How could he make her wait that time if it's just about him? So he says, no, he says the Gemara, Sarah gufa nichola. She was happy with that. Ki echid min yakir bo Avram. She wanted it to be that Avram would get the honor, meaning it was really her honor that Avram should get honor in this particular instance. Very fascinating. The Gemara goes through a number of riyas all the way through Tanakh. At the end of the story, the Gemara says the following. This is a very interesting conclusion. And this is a conclusion which has far-reaching ramifications. The Gemara says, this is on the top of Mem Zayin or Aleph, in the next paragraph. He says, Toshma, Rabbi Nosson Omar, Simon Yofe Lemes, Shenifraimi Menul Achamisa. It's actually a good thing, and you'd say counterintuitively, for it is a good thing for a dead person to have collections against them, meaning to say that there is some form of kapara after their death, which is the example is given. Meis shelo nispad v'lo nikbar. Let's say, Rachmon Litzon, you have a person who is not eulogized, was not buried correctly. Oy shechaya gararto, Rachmon Litzon, a wild animal gets hold of the body. Oy shayu geshamim mezalfin al mitoso. Oy Rachmon Litzon, you know, the body's not kept in such a proper way, and rains landing on the body. You know there's disrespect occurring to the body. Zeus simon yofel lemeis. The Gemara actually says that this is actually a good thing. It's actually a good sign. Why? Because there's a certain element of kapara given to the mace through that suffering or defacement. Shmamina yikra deshichvihu shmamina. So what do you see? You see that the end-of-life issues are really primarily a function of whom? Not those who are living, but really, actually, the mace themselves, the person themselves. And that's what the Gemara concludes. If that's the conclusion, therefore, does a person have the right to waive their own eulogy? The answer is, they do. This is actually, interestingly enough, paskind lahalacha. The Rambam says, and this is followed by Shulchan Aruch, it's in source 3, Haramam, Hesped, Kavala, Meisu, Lefichach, Koifin, Esayorshin, Itain, Schar, Mekoninin, Vamekoninos, Vesoptunosai. The people who are responsible for the actual money necessary for the people who are going to do the Hesped is they're going to be the people who are alive. Bim Tziva, Shalayus, Bedu, Ain, Soptunosai. And if the person, him or her said, no, not for me, then you actually have to listen to them. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that. Now, here there's an interesting point. Is historically speaking, this didn't always work. Interestingly enough, this didn't always work. So there's a number of instances historically of people who've said, you know, not for me, I don't want to have a hesped, but they were disobeyed, interestingly enough. One example is I just found a few, interestingly enough, in history. One example is, this is a top paragraph of page 2, is an excerpt from a Tshuva Me'ahava. The Tshuva Me'ahava was, in fact, the son of the Noida B'Yehuda. And he says the following. He comes across a diary, and he says the following. V'hinei shamati midi arav ha'charif ha'mufursam Maharal Fishels. So he has a contemporary, the Rav Fishels, who says the following. Shero'a ben kisei kodesh me'oviv. That he's found that Hagoyin Maram Fishel Zeicher Tzadik Livroch Lachayalam Abba, that he found in his father's notes Shekasa Sheshama Moreno Harav Hagoyin Shehispid Al Hagoyin Harashka Bahag Bal Pnei Yoshua Av based in Rosh Mesifta Bekila Kadosh. I'm not sure what that is. Pei Dalad Mem. So that he said that let's just put this back. Rav Fishel said he was looking in his father's diary. His father was a contemporary of the Noida B'Yehuda, the father of the Tshuva Me'ahava. So his friend is telling him about his father's generation. His father, the Noida B'Yehuda, was acclaimed to have done the following. The Pnei Yehoshua, who was really at the time the Godol Hador, the leader of the generation, said the following. Omer b'zeh loshon, Afshar Rabbeinu HaGodol about Pnei Yehoshua tzivo shelo lehaspid. Even though the Pnei Yehoshua said about himself, he said, no thanks. He doesn't need a eulogy. What happened? We don't listen to him. We don't say, you know what, it's fine, and we'll desist. For a person who's such a leader. Why? This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Samachesim Ralef. Rabbi Akiva, hoyo makeh bebesoro al Rabbi Eliezer HaGodol ad shedomosh choyseis la'aretz. What happened? Is Rabbi Eliezer HaGodol, who is the teacher of Rabbi Akiva, died. And Rabbi Akiva would hit himself. He was in such stress that his Rebbe had died that he was hitting himself. Why was he hitting himself? Just to put this in context, Rebbe Eliezer HaGadol actually died in a particular state. Anybody familiar? He was under Cherem. Rebbe Eliezer HaGadol was under Cherem. Why was he under Cherem? Just to remember this. Everybody familiar with the story of Tarushal Achnai? Right, there was a famous dispute between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yeshua. And the question was about a oven which was put back into pieces. Which was in pieces and put back together, whether that oven was Tomei or Tahar. And Rabbi Eliezer was the famous one to say, if I'm correct, the river should flow backwards and the tree should move and the wall should fall down. That's all the story of Rabbi Eliezer. And at the end of the day, Rabbi Yeshua was right because he had the majority on his side. What happened at the end? What happened after that is Rabbi Eliezer wasn't prepared to listen to Lo Veshamayim. He wasn't prepared to listen to that, and he was put into Cherem. And he died in Cherem. And when you're in Cherem, you can't teach. You're not allowed to teach publicly. He was disassociated with the community. So when he died, Rabbi Akiva was in such distress. He said, here you have a person who's perhaps the biggest and most profound teacher of the generation who was silenced. And he couldn't teach. So when he died, Rabbi Akiva was in such distress, he was hitting himself to the point that he was bleeding. And he would call about him, and he said, Avi, Avi, the father of Israel. This is actually Apostle Kintanach said about whom? Eliyahu HaNavi, right? Yeah, Rabbi Kiva quotes Eliyahu HaNavi about when Eliyahu disappears into Shemaim. He says, yeshli shulchani lahar tzoyson. He says, there's so much money that I have, but there's no table to count them. Appears Rashi. Harbi she'elos yeshli. Rashi says that Rabbi Kiva had so many questions. I don't have anybody to ask him anymore because Rabbi Eliezer is gone. Because our Torah says, "Yomakav b'sorim mishum seret l'nefesh leko." Wait a second. The Torah tells us explicitly: you can't cut yourself after somebody dies. That's a no-no. You can't. You can't take out your distress on your body. Right? He says Torah says that didn't exist there. D'mishum Torah lo ka'avid, because he was doing it because of his concern over the Torah. Hare, says the Tshuva Me'ahava, d'mishum lo yisa'asa deseret lenefesh, leka b'makom deleka shulchani lehartzoyesan. He overrode the Isur Ta'araisa of cutting himself for this mace. That's how distressed he was. Why? Because of the loss of Torah in that generation. So he says, kol shekein, deleka bozeh mitzvah lekayim divrei ha'mace. The Pnei Yehoshua says, no, well, you know what? Because he died and he was the Rashka Bahag, he was the leader of that generation, he deserved a hesped. That's what the Tshuva Me'av goes. That's how far he goes. Same thing happened, in fact, to Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger as well. Interestingly enough, Rabbi Akiva Eger used to always sign off his Tshuvas as, so not always, but in a number of cases, Akiva HaKaton, right? There was a, and people used to joke and say that people say the story that he didn't realize how big he was and so on. Whether that's true or not, in the end of the day, in his Tzavah, in his living will, he said that he doesn't want a Tzavah. And his son, Rav Shlomo Eger, writes in Sefer Ekarim, which is his Sefer, that you didn't listen to him. You know why? Because it's true that regular Hesped is Yikroda Shirchvi of the person himself. It is their honor. But when they represent much more than themselves, not just a Talmid Chacham, not just a person who's worthy of Torah, but a person who's a leader of a generation, the fact that they don't have a Hesped, in fact, is actually now a Ipizayon, a disgrace, not just to the people around him, but to the whole generation. And if you override his words, that's where you find the exceptions. I actually found out recently that Rav Simcha Wasserman, listen to this is sensitivity. He said that when he passes away, he shouldn't have a hesped unless he predeceases his wife. That was his stipulation. Why? This is sensitivity. Is that the point is that if it was for him, he didn't need it. But if he predeceases his wife and his wife's going to be there, he wanted her to hear it. For her, not for him. That was that. And interesting enough, I think he predeceased his wife by a few days or something. It was an unbelievable situation where, if I'm not mistaken, that's exactly what happened. But that was what he was thinking of. Very, very interesting.
We do it now for any situation where you come all the time and you hear, well, it's the month of Nisan, we don't do a spade.
I've got to tell you, it's very, yeah.
Always do it.
In most instances, what happens is in the month of Nisan, or in particular instances where you can't, what people do is they try to focus on the positive rather than a hesped of the. That's what the general focus. This over here is a little more subtle. This is about when the person themselves wants to say out. There was actually a funeral recently of a father of a particular teacher in YU, and his father had stipulated who was going to speak at the funeral and for how long. And he says if you disobey me, I'm going to get up and walk out. So this is Yikra Deshich Yishich. Yeah.
The Gemara seems to be concerned with the economics.
About the what?
The economics of who's going to pay, etc. Whereas a hesped not only has to do with honor, but it has to do, as you mentioned, with sensitivity to the living.
Yeah.
It's a cathartic experience for those who are the survivors, and I think that is an issue that really comes into play when you have hesped.
Well, that's the Gemara. I think when the Gemara says Yikra Dechayi, it's truly economic as well. But I think the Gemara is also saying that what the Gemara is saying is that let's say you have a tension now between the personal feeling of, I guess, humility or not wanting to make a big deal about a person, and you have balanced on the other side of that the cathartic experience that people want to have. That the Gemara says that the person themselves has that right to make that decision. Yeah. Ultimately,
there's law amazing how little car, you know what I'm saying.
They have their ability. So that, I mean, Elliot, I think it's going as far as that to say that decision process is even overrides that catharsis unless it's in a situation where it's more of a global issue. That's how far it goes. I think that's taken into account. Economically, that's one of the Nafka minutes. But the first Nafka minute is if he says he doesn't want it himself, which means even overriding it, which is like, let's take it one step further. What about the following? What happens if you have a person who says, and this is brought up in Shulchan Aruch, which is shocking, is a person says they don't want to have avelus, right? They say they don't want to have avelus. They don't want people to bother sitting shiva, shloshim, a shana. They don't want kaddish. I was speaking to somebody yesterday, and their father had told them that they didn't want them to say kaddish for them, right? The people say this, and so what? Okay, is a person as an extension of this? Is a person able to say this? So,
you don't really know their intent until after,
Okay, so now, back,
you know,
one of the big things over here in all these discussions is that people don't always know what they're talking about when they're here and now. That's an important point. But, that's the Gabi the Kaddish. What about Avelus itself? So interestingly enough, there happens to be a tshuva, a response in the 1400s which addresses this. And this is very interesting. This is a response to the Ma'arival. He was the Rav Yaakov ben Yehuda, who lived in 1456. He was born. He died before 1456. Lived in Germany. So one of the Ashkenazi poets came. He was asked the following question, and this is actually very fascinating. He says, he quotes in source 6, we're not going to read the whole thing, but he says, Isha shetziv salavon livno seha. There was a woman who had only daughters, and she says to her daughters, Shalai lisa hasar v'al roshan, and she didn't want them to pay a particular honor to her in the funeral. Hadas makra shabonos yekaimu ma shetziv, so midi dehava ima shetziva. He says, there's a precedent that they don't have to listen to her, because what happens if she would have commanded the following? Al tispiduni minachasai, don't use my estate to pay for my eulogy, to show him that we listen to them. Because we know that, as we just saw, that hesped is the honor of the dead. So to over here, from the shloishim onwards to the end of the year, is really the honor of whom? Is the honor of the deceased. So in that case, the person can, she could waive it. She could waive that right as a parent. Aval toich shleishim came under ashar mesim nami misablim olea vasmechina akra vayas laaviv avel shivas yamim. But the regarding the 7 and the 30, which is a universal thing for all deceased, and that isn't an issue of kibbutz avaim because it applies to everybody. As it says in Yerushalmi, Maisila bihilchos smochos b'mordechai, lo misparli im havi yikra dechayin, ve'eno yochol limchol, o yikra deshichvihu v'yochol limchol. I don't know if that's their right to say yes or no. Udaha vada da avelus gufei eno yochol limchol, you can't really waive the right to the avelus itself, dimkein botli luhu dine avelus. If a person's going to have the right to do that, you'll never have avelus, if you say that that's down the stream. So the Ma'arival is very circumspect about, we'll call it Ikar Avelus, the main part, the 7 and the 30. And that's what he says. And in fact, this is paskened in the Ramo in Shulchan Aruch. Problem is, yeah?
I'm sorry, so this is all Midrabbanan. There's no source Midrashah that would hold. No one can tell someone to open a Midrashah.
Well, it sounds like, one of the things he's bringing up over here is that there, we seem, well, rather than prescriptive, but descriptively, we see in Tanakh that there was an Avel Shivas Yamim made for and that we see Avelus in the Torah in a number of instances.
There's no source within the 613 that you run down from it.
Yeah, not explicitly in terms of this, but we do see the example, at least biblically. No question. The question is can you even waive that? And it depends on whether it is going to be like the eulogy or not. That's what he depends it on. Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Shulchan Aruch asks the following question, a very simple question. And that is in a very unfortunate instance. He says the following. We know that there's a dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban. When you learn Hilchos Avelus, a very terrible dispute about a person who kills themselves. Right? So in Rachmana Litzlan, a person who takes their own life. Does such a person have Avelus or not? It happens to be this is a dispute between the Ramban in Torah Sa'adam and the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, whether such a person has Avelus. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rambam, that such a person doesn't have Avelus. Now, interestingly enough, just as an important footnote, I just heard Rav Willig speaking last week on this topic, and he pointed out that unfortunately, Bizmanenu, most cases of suicide are not what the Shulchan Aruch are talking about. But the Shulchan Aruch is a person who takes their life on principle, meaning a person who is psychologically sound and takes their life as a decision, as a sound decision, but ladas. Whereas unfortunately, most cases today are people who, unfortunately, there are issues. There are psychological issues which may mean that the decision is not a sound decision as well, which changed the Hilchos Avelus. But Bir Zemei, in the a very sensitive, very sad topic, but Bir Zemei, the Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens, that there's no Avelus for such a person. Why? If a person does a Ladas. Why? Says Rabbi Kiveg, you see something interesting. That means that the Shiva itself is ultimately an honor for whom? For the dead. And when a person decides to, in a certain sense, forfeit on their own life, then they have made that act of decision then, according to the Rambam, to forfeit that honor. That's why the Rambam paskins it. So says the Rekiva Eger, you see from here a very simple thing, is whose honor ultimately is the Shiva and the Shloshim, is ultimately, ultimate base and foundation is the deceased. That's what you see from that example. So he says that maybe, therefore, that is within the right of a person. That's what the Rebbe Kiva Eger, he ends in a Tzarech Iyun, at the end of this paragraph over here. But he says maybe from that model it seems clear that a person, in fact, is their own Balem on this. Now it happens to be, he says he leaves it in a Tzarech Iyun, it's not so clear, because as we all know, that when you walk into, I think this is just an important point to bear in mind, is that when you walk into a Shiva house, there are people who walk into a Shiva house because of their relationship with the people who passed away, and the people who walk into a Shiva house or to a funeral because of the relationship with the family. Not that didn't have anything to do with the mace as well. And I think these two concepts, the Yichrud HaShichvi and the Yichrud HaChai, are very much both very real things. So although he leaves in a Tzarech Iyun, Rabbi Kiva Eger, but I think it's important to accentuate that both elements over here are extremely important. Now, the Marival doesn't know which way to go. Rabbi Kiva Eger says this model might tell us one direction, but that in the end of the day, it's not clear which one is which. But this is just a very fascinating take on this. Let's take it one step further, if that's all right, just in the time we have left. I wanted to get into, if you'll excuse the pun, autopsies, but I don't think we're going to have time to get into that. But let's move a little bit just into funerals themselves. This is more complicated now. What about funerals? You know, there was a lady who says to her daughter, she says, when I'm Meir Estrim at that day, I want to make sure that I'm not going to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. And the daughter says, you know, Mom, she says, but we already got you the karka and, you know, the whole mishpachas there. Why not? She says, I want to be buried in Bloomingdale's. She says, you know, Mom, that's really, you know, she says, at least my family will visit me twice a year. So the question is, forgetting the eulogies, forgetting the shiva for a moment, is does a person have the right to decide about their own burial? Meaning in terms of making some critical decisions. So the Gemara asks the same question, actually. First of all, let's take a step backwards. How do we know that there's a mitzvah to bury a person in the first place? This is biblical now, right? So how do we know there's a mitzvah to bury a person in the first place? Interestingly enough, this is important. In Bereishis, when we see certain things that the Avos did, that's what we call descriptive, right? So we learn the certain values by what they actually did. But when it comes to an actual mitzvah, we need the Torah to actually tell it to us post-Sinai, right? So the reason why we keep Bris Mila is not because Aaron Avinu kept Bris Mila. We learn some halachas from there. But the reason why we keep Bris Mila is because in Parshat Tazria tells us, on the Yom HaShmini, Imol B'Sar HaRosai, right? That's the reason why. So now, where in the Torah, post-Sinai, do we see that the Torah actually tells us that burial is important? Or we need to? Again, that's descriptive. Again, it's descriptive. It's descriptive. So the psukim say in Devarim that if a person dies a capital punishment, let's say a person breaks Shabbos b'farhesia, right? A person profanes Shabbos, he gets warning, there's edim, the whole business, and they now are liable for skila, right? For stoning. Okay, so in that case, what happens is the halacha is that after they're stoned, they're hanged up. By the way, that's just an English thing.
Yes.
You nupi, right? Your shirt was hung up, and when it comes to hanging, it's hanged. So the person is hanged up as an example, or as perhaps a v'kolam yishmu v'yirao, that people should take note. But the Gemara, the Torah says. Says you should only hang him up for less than a day. That's what the Torah tells us. So the Gemara says from here that you see kikavortik bereni, you should surely bury him, is not just a imperative about that person who rachamon litzlon got into capital punishment, but it's also about everybody. There's an importance. Rashi goes so far as to say. Rashi's example over here. Anybody remember what Rashi says? Why is it? What's kilas elokim tolui? That the curse of Hashem is hanging. Why? What's the curse of Hashem? Rashi gives an interesting example. I remember this when I learned this in like 7th grade. And this particular Rashi is that it's imagined that you have like twins. You have twins, and what happens is one of them goes, one of them becomes a nobleman or a king, and the other one, you know, doesn't take the straight and narrow and becomes a thief. And the thief is, goes one day too far and gets killed for his crimes. And there's somebody, and he's hanged up. And everybody who's walking by says, the king's there. Meaning they're looking at it and they see the face and the identical twins and they think, it's the king. So says Rashi, we are the king. The Tzelem Elokim is, we are the king. You can't leave a human being in disgrace because we represent God. Right? That's what Rashi says over here on this pasuk. So this is where the Torah learns out in the first place that the importance of burial and the importance of quick burial, in fact. Right? Lo salin nivlo sai is not to leave over. We try as fast as possible to, when able, to have a funeral. So the Gemara asks the following question. Following this limud, the Gemara in source 8 says the following. This is the Gemara, again, in Sanhedrin, Mem Vav, Mem, just before the Gemara we looked at beforehand. The Gemara asks the following question. Yibaylehu, kvura mishum bizyaynahu, oi mishum kaparahu. Why do we bury? We know the Torah tells you to, but why? Why do you do it? Is it because of bizayon, because of disgrace, or mishum kaparah, or because of atonement? Now, it sounds a little bit like Yikra d'shichvi, Yikra d'chai, right? Is it the honor of the life or the honor of the dead? But it's a little more subtle. So let's not try to put the schema into each other before understanding this. Kapora, what's kapora? That's an easier way to understand. Easier one to understand. What is the notion of kapora?
Atonement.
What's
the negative process of the body? Okay. The generation of the body will is a kapora.
Okay. So the kapora, the process of burial itself, is something which is going to affect a kapora, because there's an element of suffering. What element of suffering is there in burial? So it could be the burial itself, but it could also be longer term, is the fact that there's going to be decomposition. It's interesting to note the Ramban says in Shara Gemul, this is just interesting, is that in the Ramban's way of looking at it, which is more predominantly the traditional way of looking at things, is that after death, the soul and the body separate, and they both go through their own cleansing processes, right? So the soul, for a certain amount of time, depending on the person, goes through a period of purification. And the body itself goes through a parallel process of purification, which is the biodegradation process. So that at the end of the day, when it comes back to Tchias HaMesim, the two are reunited in a clean state. That's the way it's the Ramban views it as a full cycle, which is very interesting. And the reason why this is important, by the way, is so that the body should be intact. But also, this is also important because that means to say that there are certain tzaddikim throughout the generations who didn't biodegrade. In fact, recently they were digging highways through white Russia. They were putting up new highways, and some of them went through graveyards, and they dug up some people, and the people had not decomposed. Right? Because the chibut hakever is something which is a purification process parallel to the soul purification. Some people don't need it. I think very recently there was an instance that this occurred. The biodegradation process did not occur on a body. Very, very fascinating. Be it as it may, this is what the one side of the Gemara says. Is the process of burial as a kapora? That's the one point. Or, what's bizayon? This is the more complicated one. What's bizayon? What's the disgrace over here that you bury the dead for? What could it possibly be? Okay, so what Saul's saying is that it might be for us. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says in source, Na mishum bizayonahu, Shlo yizbaze le'en kol shiyiruhu meis v'nirkav rad v'nivka. If we're going to chas v'shalom, leave people unburied, it's going to be terrible for the people around them because they're going to be witnessing the decomposition and it'll be something disgraceful for those around. So what's the attention over here? Is it about the meis, or is it about us? That's what it sounds like in the way that Rashi is describing, which sounds similar to the same schema before, a little similar.
So
Mr. Weinstein is saying is very interesting is that the Torah suggests a little more of a global reasoning. If you look in source 10, the Torah, Rabbeinu Yaakov, who is one of the precursors of the Shulchan Aruch, says, "V'omer altik beruhu." If a person says, "Don't bury him," he says, "Ein shomim, no, we don't listen to him." He says the bizayon is not just to those around who are present in the mere presence of this person, but it's about a bizayon to all of Chayim, meaning to say to humanity it's a problem. To humanity it's an issue, not in the lack of burial, which is a bigger perspective. Now, the Gemara asks the same question, Lamai Nafkimina. And the Gemara says, but they say, you know what? The person says he doesn't want to be buried. And that's the nafkamina, because if it's about kapora, he can say, you know what? I don't need a kapora. When it comes to Bizayon, maybe he doesn't have the rights to forfeiting Bizayon. That's what the Gemara suggested. Interestingly enough, I put the end of the Gemara, we're not going to go through it, it gives a few proofs. The Gemara does not conclude. The Gemara does not say one way or another. It doesn't say whether burial is because of Bizayon or because of Kapor in the end of the day. Never answers the question, doesn't seem. So what is it? So what do we do? So Rambam says the following, and so we just go back to the Rambam we saw just beforehand. The Rambam is on the first page in source 3. The Rambam says, Im Tziva, this is starting on the second line. In the Rambam source 3, he says, if a person says that commands that he shouldn't be buried, Ein Shamim Loi. We don't listen to such a command. Shagvura mitzvah, because burial is a command from the Torah, Shenemar, ki kavar sikberenu. The Rambam says you don't listen to him. Why? Because the Torah tells us to. Why is the Rambam paskening that way? I mean, the Gemara doesn't answer it. So how is the Rambam paskening that you should bury them irrespective of their best intention and wishes? Why do you disagree with them? Where's the Rambam getting that from? The Gemara doesn't answer it.
The Gemara doesn't answer what the reason is, but you still have to bury somebody.
Okay, so the Gemara does present it as kapora or bizayon and says the nafkamin is if a person says not, do you listen to them or not? And the Gemara doesn't answer that. So technically speaking, it's still in the balance as to whether he can forfeit his own burial or not. Where's the Gemara? Where the Rambam get this from?
On you, not on him.
Okay, so the Rambam seems to be saying that there's an overarching chiyuv over here. The way the Kesa Mishnah words it in that direction is in Source 11. He says, "Umar shekosuv aval im tziva shelo yikbar ein shamim loy." The Kesa Mishnah is actually the Shulchan Aruch in his commentary on the Rambam before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He says, "Gam ze sham baya v'lo ifshata." It was an unsolved question in the Gemara. The cause of a Ramban hilka koyvino so desofik isurahu. I feel a bol yorshim nami dolelikbaru umotzi in my hand bal korchay. Vavira meis ba'amo deleis le koyvrin. He says, why? It's a sofek isura. We have a sofek, and what's the realm of halacha over here? This is not money. This is isurim. And a sofek isura, the rules are, you go lahachmir. So in this case, even though the Gemara doesn't resolve the issue, we know the rules of halacha dictate that we have to go lechumra in this case. That's what the Kesef Mishnah says. Okay? Because in general, there's lots of room for debate in the Gemara, but tachlis, you need to have an answer la halacha, and the rules of halacha are, in isurim, the sofek goes lechumra. However, that might not be the answer. Let's go back for a moment. What was the answer to, when we were talking about eulogy, where did we resolve the issue from? Well, how do we know, how did the Gemara point to one direction, where the eulogy was the honor of the living or the dead? What was the answer the Gemara gave? Remember the case the Gemara gave? It says, if you have a case where the body is disgraced in some form or fashion, the Gemara says it's a simon tov lemes. It's actually a good thing for the mes, that it should be for them, a kapara. Says the Yad Rama in his commentary on Sanhedrin, one of the earlier Rishonim, he says, that isn't just an answer about eulogy. What do you see from there? You see, at the end of the whole discussion, it really is not just about the eulogy, it's even about burial. The Gemara itself did answer it, but didn't explicitly say it was answering it. So the Yad Rama says that, in fact, the answer why eulogy is the Yikra Deshichvi of the honor of the dead is ultimately also an answer here, that it's really ultimately Yikra Deshichvi, and a person... So he would say, one second. Let's just see over here in the end of source 12. He says in third line in from the period he says, "Va'ahu demash mole'el, demand a savrale, demishum bizyonahu ki amar loisik baru loitzas sinale, mishum bizyonah dechai, la'olam mishum bizyonah demisnahu." It's really a bizyon to the dead. "V'kol milsa deisba bizyon lemeis koshikain deisle bizyon nachai dechazule." Because it's going to be bizarre to both the living and the dead. The Gemara Shavkala to Rabbi Nosson Levasoif Hani Trei Bayi Kihechi De Levshatiunhu LeTrevah Minei. The Gemara's answer is meant to answer both. This is what the Yad Rama says, and this is in fact Paskan Aloch and the Shulchan Aruch. We don't have so much time, but maybe just one fascinating thing to consider. There's a few things to consider. Number one is the Chashukei Chemed. Is Rav Zilberstein, Schlitter, says a very interesting thing. He has the most remarkable questions come across his doorstep. If you ever read any of the Chashukei Chemed, you can't make this stuff up. He had an interesting question about there were two people going on a trip, and they were going to America, and they stopped over in an airport in Europe, and one of the people had a heart attack, and Rahman Etzon died right there in the airport. And so the question now is, the authorities of that country, he didn't say which country it was, wouldn't allow a body to be flown out in an airplane. They would only allow it to be flown out with a private jet or to have an autopsy in the hospital there. That was the question at hand. And the question was, is who's responsible? Should they raise the money? Who's going to pay for the private jet? Who over here is ultimately responsible for taking the body back to the place where it should be buried? That's the question that he was asked. And he goes into some response, some earlier response, and he says the following. This is on page 6, the very, very last paragraph. The Chashuk Echemet, Rav Zilberstein, says the following. He says, on page 6, the bottom, he says, L'or zois, v'fi ha-mavur b'divrei ha-mara mintz, shirak b'kfuro chaya v'mabonim. Who is ultimately responsible for the burial is the direct children. Avo b'hoitzois ha-nasiya, mimakom l'makom chaya v'mish nimtza l'yadoi. Who's responsible for transporting the mace to the burial, to the funeral home, is the person who's closest at hand. Isn't that interesting? Meaning the implications of the bizayon are more impactful on the person who's closest to them in proximity more than in relationship. Right? The brother who's with the person in that airport is responsible for making the arrangements for travel. And the children are only responsible for the burial itself. Which is what he's doing is he's saying, it is true, ultimately, that there is a certain bizarre, which is over here when a person is not buried. But it goes in different stages. When it comes to the burial itself, it's the responsibility of the children. When it comes to the getting there, it's the people who are nearest, because that bizarre extends to that.
It's like a mace mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's almost like an egel aruf. It's like the mace mitzvah model almost, or what's going on over here. But it's just interesting how he divides this up. He talks about, when the Gemara says, Yikra d'chai, Yikra d'shichvi, whom? So Yikra d'shichvi, Yikra d'chai, the bizayon, might actually apply itself to different people differently. That's Ad Kedei Kach he goes. One last point just to close with, and then we'll leave it over here, because this really affects autopsies, because you can imagine now, if the Gemara is talking about a bizayon of the mace, or the kapar of the mace, so what happens if people say, you know what, it's fine for me, I don't mind donating my body to science. And then the relatives say, it's fine for us as well. So if you've got both parties over here who have given the consent, does that make it all right? That's the question which is dealt with in the halacha for medical reasons, which is very fascinating. But one thing just to consider is the following, is that really what we've seen over here is that the ultimate tension in all these issues, whether it be hesped, whether it be the actual nihuga avelus or kvura itself, is that there's a tension between yikra d'chai and yikra d'shichvi. Whose honor is it? Is it the living or is it the dead? And in a certain sense, both of them are elements which can't be denied, like Eliot was saying beforehand. What's interesting is the following, is that in the fourth bracha in benching, we have, biblically, the Torah tells us to bench, and we bench three brachas midoraisa, right? We say, azanes hakol, and we have the land, nadelacha, and we have rachemna on Yerushalayim. And the Gemara describes that historically these all came at three different stages. Moshe Rabbeinu, when the man came down, they said the first bracha. Yoshua, when they conquered the land of Eretz Israel, they instituted the second bracha. When David HaMelech conquered Jerusalem, that's when they instituted the third bracha. Where did the fourth bracha come in? There's four brachas. So the Gemara in Bava Basra and in Tainus, the Gemara in Bava Basra is in Kuf Chaf Beis, and Tainus Lamed Aleph talks about that one of the six reasons as to why we celebrate Tu B'Av. The sixth reason for Tu B'Av is that what happened was at the end of the Hadrianic persecutions, let's put things in perspective, year 68 to 70 is when the siege of Jerusalem was, where the Romans besieged Jerusalem, they destroyed the temple. What happened was after that, they were under the thumb of Rome, but in the year about 126 to 32 was when Bar Kokhba, Bar Kaziva led a rebellion against the Romans, which was initially successful, and it angered the Romans so much that when they came in full force, they sent something remarkable, like 14 legions, right, of Romans to squash the rebellion. They razed Jerusalem to the ground. They renamed it Elia Capitolina, Jews weren't allowed access to Jerusalem again. They renamed it Palestine to disassociate with the national heritage. That's where the Palestinian issue began. And the number of Jews who were killed in that era was far more than even at the time of the destruction of the temple. Terrible, terrible time. And the last bastion of rebellion was Beitar. Beitar was a fortified city, and Bar Kokhba was inside, and his troops, and this is the end of it. There was such a wrath when they conquered Beitar, they slaughtered everybody in the city, and they didn't allow anybody of the who was surviving to have access to the bodies. They left their bodies lying around for weeks. And at a certain point, they allowed them to re-access the city, and they found as a miracle that the bodies hadn't rotted. None of the bodies had rotted. And they instituted at that point in time, Hatov HaMeitiv. The Gemara says, why do we say the bracha Hatov HaMeitiv? Hatov, Hashem is good, Shelo Yisrichu, HaMeitiv, and He is good again. Why? Shinitan Lekvur, that Hashem allowed us to give them into burial. Why did such a singular event impact all our benchings till today? Very good question. Not for now. But ultimately, that was where the bracha comes from. It's because of the Haruge Beitar, because of the disease of Beitar. Interesting question in Halacha. When do you say Hatova Meitiv over Shechianu? Shechianu, you also say good tidings. When do you say Hatova Meitiv over Shechianu?
When you inherit a lot of money from your father or your...
Okay, so the Gemara in Brachos goes backwards and forwards as to when it is said. The Gemara ultimately says the following. When you have something which is good which happens to you individually, you say Shechianu. When you have something which is good to you and it affects those around you as well, then you say Hatov HaMeitiv. Hatov means for you, good for you, and Meitiv literally means good for others. It does good, not just is good, but does good. Says that Anav Yosef, who's on the commentaries on Agada, on Tanis, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. Why do we say Hatov HaMeitiv? It's because when there wasn't a burial, there were two parties that were at stake there. There was the bodies themselves, and there were the people around them. Hatov HaMeitiv means Hatov. It was good for the bodies. But HaMeitiv, it was good for those around the bodies. Because that tension, that same tension of the Yikra D'chai and the Yikra D'shichi was there when they were watching this terrible tragedy unfolding. Hatov HaMeitiv is where we thank Hashem both in the sake of those who needed the burial and both of those around who were experiencing this terrible Bizayon HaMeis as they were. And that, every time we say benching, those two elements that we've been discussing all the shir is in fact embedded into that part of the benching. Hopefully next week what we're going to do is we'll start off a little bit with autopsies, which is a much larger and very fascinating thing for medical, for Hatzolos Nefoshos, Emet Hashem.